Thanks for joining us for the Executive Series. In this particular series of interviews, we're talking to money managers to try and get an understanding of how they're navigating the current economic and market situations. Joining me today is Jason Beddo, who is the Managing Director of Argo Investments.
Hey Tom, good morning.
Jace, good to talk to you.
Nice to sort of, I guess, return to some normality.
It's approaching normality. We're making our best efforts to be as socially distanced as possible here, of course.
Yes.
Now, how are you rationalising the current market conditions? We've seen some very interesting behaviours in the market, difficult to rationalise.
Agreed. It's been fascinating sort of working through it in the markets. Trying to sort of reconcile what's happening in the real world today and where markets are thinking. You know, markets do move ahead. As I mentioned before, you know, I had a taxi ride this morning, which is quite novel. I haven't caught a taxi since probably early March. So things have definitely been different for a lot of people, working from home, just not working at all. But markets, I guess, are being fueled by, you know, central bank support, government support, and a general will to, you know, keep things back or get them back on an even keel, you know, as soon as possible. You know, whether that tends to be the ultimate driver that gets us through, or, you know, down the track, you know, earnings and the reality of the impact on the real economy does start to question, I guess, people's minds and then markets as to maybe we've gone a little bit too far too quickly.
So given the fact that, you know, this all has happened so very quickly, you know, we went into a lockdown relatively quickly. We had a stimulus and the rate cuts deployed very quickly. It's almost been as though there's been very little time in which to actually make some calculations to understand, you know, where we might be in 2, 3, 6 months. Even Treasury have been challenged when it comes to the calculations. So it's forgivable under these circumstances. What's your base case for things at the moment?
Look, I think, you know, your point is it's happened super fast. I mean, if we look back on every other sort of major dislocation that happened over years, stimulus has happened quickly. You know, markets peaked at the end of February and went into free fall literally for about 6 weeks. And then, you know, we've recovered probably half of that, maybe two thirds now. Look, it is difficult. You know, we've got most companies, you know, the last few years have had guidance out there. You know, they give some sort of indication of what the next year or period is going to look like. Most of the ASX 200 have pulled guidance. They just don't know.
Yep.
Equally, I guess back when, you know, we saw it in the press, you know, there was quite a lot of panic about how bad the situation could be. And Australia has been quite lucky. I mean, we see overseas, you know, the experience there has been quite tragic. You know, touch wood for Australia, you know, maybe some good management and some good luck. We haven't had that experience. That things, you know, didn't get to that extent, and we're sort of on the road back earlier than we thought. If you think about some of the commentary from politicians, and they've had a pretty tough job to do, I think, but they probably lagged on the way in and they're lagging on the way out. I mean, you know, school children were probably going to be out for all of term two, or before we know it, they're back at school fully. And so the restarting of the economy clearly is going to happen quicker. Whether we have in our winter season, the virus comes back, and what does that do for people's behaviour? Do we embrace being allowed out and having some normality? Do we, you know, cower away again? Or so look, I think it is pretty uncertain, and I think if you're sitting in, you know, boardrooms of major Australian companies trying to predict, you know, I think medium term, I think, you know, we can have a bit more certainty of how things might look in, you know, 2 or 3 years. I think the next 6 to 12 months, though, I think is pretty challenging, particularly when the rest of the world doesn't have this virus under control. And, you know, in the world of globalisation and international trade and international markets, you know, we are all linked together.
That's an interesting point that you make in terms of changing the time horizon, because you push it out for a couple of years, and then all of a sudden it becomes a little easier to navigate compared to trying to work out where we're going to be at the end of the year. Is that the tendency that you're tending to adopt when you don't have the forecasting and the business models tweaked the way you normally would?
Look, for us, you know, I guess we always say we're a long-term investor, and sometimes that's a good strategy to have. Sometimes that's you know, the market moves against you with momentum and other things. Look, in this particular sort of environment, you know, we didn't react particularly during March in the fall. It was happening so fast. It was fascinating to watch.
Yep.
You know, a couple of stocks that we thought were maybe very heavily exposed, the travel industry, and international, you know, related to international tourism. So with the market falling, the recapitalizations began, companies putting their hand out to, you know, for equity. Our revenue had dried up overnight, which is almost unprecedented, very different to a normal recession when things fall. So we assumed that there would be a significant number of capital raisings coming to market. There was some issuance, some well-known companies, you know, QBE, Lendlease, Ramsey's in the bigger numbers. There was also some, you know, Webjet and Flight Centre that were really probably company-saving capital raisings. And we, I guess like a lot of the market, thought, well, there'll be some capital raisings coming. They're generally priced relatively attractively, a discount to market to our incentivized shareholders to support them. And we'd probably be redeploying cash into the market that way. Now, that hasn't really happened. That's dried up. So the market's rallied. And we're kind of, I guess, scratching our head a bit around valuations now, particularly in that shorter time period. Now, will there be a second dip? Will there be a better chance to redeploy capital? Or are we through the worst and, you know, we march on upwards? That's a million-dollar question. I wish I had the answer.
It's such a tough one. And particularly when you talk about, you know, trying to value things when you've got zero interest rates, that makes it incredibly challenging. And trying to talk in value terms, how do you look at that picture?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think there's other overlays happening at the moment with just liquidity of money in the markets. You know, credit markets are being supported, equity markets are being supported. I mean, the Fed are buying ETFs. I mean, it's widespread, and the numbers that have been thrown at the global economy by central banks is enormous. It's off pretty much every historical chart. I think, yeah, that's the key driver at the moment. Yeah, if you're sitting down trying to look at a model on a bottom-up view, you know, what risk-free rate do you use in this environment? You know, what cost of capital? And, you know, I guess in some ways, you know, these numbers aren't making a lot of sense in the current environment. But, you know, clearly with interest rates low and low for a very long time, and as stated policy, you know, money's going to be cheap. There's going to be plenty of it around, and it will need to find a home to get returns with cash rates negative, or in real terms, you know, negative pretty much everywhere around the world.
So all of that central bank support, it's impossible to ignore. Even if you were skeptical and you had some concerns, there is a risk in ignoring all of that support, isn't there?
Well, you sort of think at some point in time this has to be repaid. At some point in time, you know, government balance sheets are going to get to a level where they won't be able to keep supporting the economy, and indeed they're going to have to, you know, refinance, repay. That's probably a further out problem, but it will be a real problem. And again, you know, how markets behave through that cycle, what damage is done to the global economy. Now, clearly some regions will come out of this earlier, and, you know, arguably China has and is stimulating itself and beginning building infrastructure. Australia looks like, you know, we should have a rather benign experience, you know, touch wood. Hopefully that's correct. But parts of Europe, you know, South America and the US itself, you know, it looks like this crisis or pandemic could go on for many more months still, until they get on top of the health crisis before we can move on to sort of the economic outlook.
So in terms of the domestic sectors that you'd be positively inclined towards, what sort of falls into that group?
Yeah, look, it's tough because I guess the defensive quality names have been pretty well supported, and are trading at relatively full valuations, but you get your security. Health has been an outstanding sector probably globally for the last 5-10 years. And now health's now, I think it's about 15% of the Aussie index, which is extraordinary. I think it was 4% only sort of 5-6 years ago. So look, we like those names, but they're pretty tough from a valuation to redeploy new money. Now, some of the consumer discretionary sort of names, and maybe not just in pure retail, but whether it be, you know, auto retailing. Now, this, some of the thoughts are that people will be driving a lot more, not wanting to use public transport, domestic holidays and the like. That, you know, and there's plenty of cash in the economy, and there'll be plenty of cash in the economy until the government stimulus ends or is restructured. And maybe there's a, now that there's a little bit more in the kitty, maybe there's a second round. Maybe a bit more targeted, but now there's plenty of cash around short term. Some of those stocks were heavily sold off in the, you know, I guess a worst case scenario you know, technically we'll have a recession, but it may not feel like a recession.
Yeah.
You know, with JobKeeper and JobSeeker, and you know, the holding back on mortgage payments, people drawing down super. I mean, there is a lot of cash.
Yeah.
In the economy, considering the benign health outlook. So, you know, some of those names are looking interesting, but look, really, the whole market's run pretty hard back to where we are, particularly if you consider the banks haven't participated, the four major banks. You know, if they had moved even in line with the index, we would be well back through 6,000. And considering the disruption to the world, you know, we think that the risk reward up there is probably, you know, maybe for a more conservative investor like us, it's probably getting a little pointed.
If there were some areas that you would be avoiding quite enthusiastically, are there any sectors that fill that description?
Not so much sectors, Tom. I mean, we think, you know, clearly we haven't been great investors in some of the high growth names. And a number of those stocks, you know, are actually at all-time highs. And clearly, you know, with people working from home, much more emphasis on IT, networks, communications, you know, some of those businesses will benefit. But, you know, we look at those again, looking at, you know, the disruption that the world is going to experience over the next 6 or 12 months as we normalise things. You know, do these businesses deserve to grow, you know, to be priced on these multiples for some of them that are still not generating cash? You know, they're still EBITDA, you know, break even perhaps. So we struggle with those. The health names, you know, we really like some of these stocks, but again, they're pretty full valuations for stocks that will still have some disruption into their earnings. So, you know, we look across, I guess, the markets and go, well, you know, some of these companies are going to have modest earnings disruptions. And then you look at some of the businesses that, because of the shutdowns that are enforced, are having zero revenue. And in previous times, and I know each situation is different, you know, if a company missed its earnings guidance by, say, 5%, so instead of growing at 10%, they grew at 7%, you know, they would often be sold off 10, 15, 20%. And now we're talking about companies that are having zero revenue and potentially losing $20 or $30 million a month, and they're rocketing back up to levels, you know, pre the virus. So there is a real disconnect. You know, you can't underestimate money flow and momentum. And equally, you know, even just this week, you know, we've seen some money, I think, flowing out of Asia with the civil, you know, the riots starting in Hong Kong again. Australia is part of the Asian indexes, and money coming back to Australia because, in a relative sense, we look pretty safe now.
So is that a factor to take into consideration, how we might be seen as a safe haven if the dialogue between the US and China ratchets up to an uncomfortable level?
Well, potentially, again, that's a bit of a double-edged sword, as we're sort of still an economy and our currency reacts pretty negatively to sort of, you know, poor trade data. You know, it's a fairly high beta currency, even though the, you know, the market and the structure is probably relatively defensive. So, but I, you know, I think as a, with the US market back where it is, Australia has lagged that. Now, clearly a different cohort without the big tech stocks here. But, you know, there's probably some value, and at least safe value, in Australia if you're a more global investor.
In terms of the situation as it relates to the US and China, at what point do you start taking a lot more notice of that deterioration, which seems to be already pretty substantial?
Yeah, well, look, it's again, the irony is pre, you know, COVID-19, the big issue for the world over the previous 2 years has been the trade war, China and the US. And yeah, that was largely negative for markets. I mean, in that time, you know, the Fed had to stop raising rates and was cutting pretty aggressively. I mean, we started this at 75 basis points. I mean, things were not rosy, particularly.
Already,
you know, 75 basis points is not a strong economy. So, you know, I think that's a key issue going forward. I guess in some ways, some of that maybe supply chain disruption had already started. And that's, this will certainly, you know, push that along quicker. But yeah, I think it's a key, you know, the US presidential election and how that's played off against the China-US relationship. It seems to be an easy scorecard for US politicians. Will be interesting because, you know, the Chinese are probably in a pretty good position, ex perhaps a key commodity or two, to fight back.
Now, unemployment is notoriously quick to rise and very slow to adjust itself in terms of a recovery. How significant is that in terms of the consumer part of the Australian economy?
I think it's very important. I mean, I think actually, as being part of the CBA, Tom, that you know, some of the data the banks will be collecting on credit cards, mortgages, and others will be some of the key information for the economy and the other major banks. We're a service-driven economy. I think circa 70% of the GDP is consumer spending in some way, shape, or form. And if the rest of the world struggles with COVID-19, international travel's delayed, student numbers, tourists, there's some offset with domestic tourism, but I do think that's going to have a pretty big impact on retail, events,
yep.
Certain geographies that are very big tourist attractions. It's going to be tough for a lot of service industries. And those numbers, you would think, will go up. Now, at the moment, I guess we're in a sheltered period. The government have moved quickly with JobKeeper, JobSeeker, and the like, and we probably won't get a real feel for how things look maybe till the end of December. So we're in a bit of a, maybe not the eye of the storm, but maybe in a relatively benign period. The stimulus is there. The health crisis hasn't eventuated domestically, so things aren't too bad. But I think it's going to take some months, which is a long time for equity markets. If you're thinking about November, December, we've got reporting season in August, which will be interesting, but probably quite terrible numbers. I think we're going to be patient and see how things look sort of closer to the end of the year.
You're absolutely right. It's going to be a fascinating back end of the year, which will include, of course, the US presidential election. So, Jase, I look forward to the next conversation that we have because there will be plenty to talk about then. Thanks for your time today.
Thanks, Tom.
And thanks for joining us for the Executive Series.